Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Checklist for Implementing High Availability Using Multi-Instances in Message Broker Version 7. Today's presenter is Ralph Nanduri. Ralph has been an L2 support engineer since September 2006. He is responsible for addressing customers' reported day-to-day product defect problems in WebSphere Message Broker. He co-authored a web paper on new features in WebSphere Message Broker version 6.1 and also participated in a few WSTE presentations earlier. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Ralph.
Hello, Joseph. Thank you. Okay, today I'm going to talk about some of the implementation issues, new feature, multi-instance brokers, and the agenda of the items today are, I'll go over the introduction and then overview, and I'll talk about the restrictions that to set up these multi-instances, and then discuss about how to create and manage these instances and testing the failover and configuring these multi-instances in traditional HA environments, and then provide some useful links. Next slide, slide number 3, please. As all of us know, that Message Broker version 7 and its architecture have been extensively simplified, and there have been a few interacting components. The runtime has consisted of only a single component Message Broker. That way, it can be deployed in a wide range of processing environments very easily. And also, the broker's persistent configuration is now stored in exclusively in a file system, which is and no database is involved, unless the users want to access user databases. The other simplification is that the tools like toolkits and other tools can connect to the broker directly, since there is no configuration manager in between. This change reduces the number of steps requiring administrative tasks and give the tools to direct access to access the configuration information. And today I'm going to talk about a feature which is based on the WebSphere MQ 701 introduced concept of multi-instances queue managers, which lets multiple instances of the queue manager sit on separate machines, thus providing a high availability active passive configuration. Multi-instance brokers work on top of multi-instance queue managers to provide basic failover and helps making MQ and brokers highly available without the overhead of other third-party HA solutions. However, if you want to have, if you have application servers or databases or any other service resources, then this new feature is not intended to replace the currently available HA solutions. You would have to keep them as they are. Slide number 4, please. The traditional clusters, cluster configurations like HACMP, HP, ServiceGuard, VCS, and Microsoft clusters rely on virtual IP addresses to which the clients make connections. There are CAT2 type used as these support packs like MC91 and IC91 for MQ and message broker help to manage the direct message components within the cluster resource groups. I'll touch IC91 support pack later in the discussion. Earlier, there was a presentation on how one can configure and manage multi-instances of the queue managers, and I have provided the link and would advise you to visit and review the material there. Slide number 5, please. Yeah, the configuration files of both message broker and the queue managers have to be placed on a shared network. The node containing the active broker and the queue manager fails, a second instance automatically becomes active on the standby node by picking up the stopped brokers and queue managers configuration. The feature works in one of the two ways. Each broker's instance can be started as an MQ service so that when the queue manager fails over to the standby node, the broker is automatically get started on the standby node. Alternatively, the standby broker can be continually running in a semi-initialized or standby state, waiting for the associated standby queue manager and shared broker configuration to become available. An active broker instance fails over when its associated active multi-instance queue manager terminates unexpectedly or stops in a controlled manner. The action of stopping an active broker instance on an active multi-instance queue manager doesn't by itself cause the standby broker instance to be active. That means what I want to convey is here, the broker doesn't fail over on its own. It fails over when its partner queue manager instance fails over. The NQSA stop command has no influence on the broker failover. Also, when node or host A fails completely, the multi-instance queue manager detects this and allows the queue manager instance on the node B to move from standby to active mode. And this will allow the broker on the node B to be active, become active without any manual intervention. Slide number 6, please. Here, basically, the multi-instances are supported in almost all platforms except ZOS. And there are certain MQ issues that are being addressed for the iSeries and Solaris operating systems. And once they are addressed, then they will be, the support will be fully operational on those operating systems as well. Can we go to the next slide, please? Slide number 7. Here, what are the restrictions that these multi-instances have? We have to keep in mind before jumping in. The first one is the multi-instance brokers cannot be migrated from earlier versions. That means you cannot. If you have a broker in version 6.0 or 6.1, then you cannot migrate those brokers into the multi-instance broker. Or even if you create one in version 7, you won't be able to migrate that as a multi-instance broker. You have to and you must create these brokers using MQSI commands, which I'm going to discuss later. And also the other restriction is the nodes A and B should contain the same operating system, and the mix and match are not allowed. And the slide number 8, please. The two nodes with the Windows operating system should be part of domain controller, and the users and groups on the Windows should be defined as at a domain level. For example, MQM or MQSA brokers should be part of the domain level if the operating system is Windows. In case of Unix operating systems, the users and groups should have identical UID and GID, both characters and also the numerical digits should be same across all the servers and the nodes. Number 9, please. The next part is how we can go creating and managing these multi-instances. Can we go to the slide number 10. The steps to create the multi-instance brokers involves three steps. The first one is we have to have a shared network storage, the directory. And the second step would be creating a multi-instance queue manager. The third step is a multi-instance broker. Let's talk about how we can create a shared work path directory. Slide number 11. Because not all the locking protocols of the network file systems are robust, and because a file system might be configured for performance rather than data integrity, from version 7.0.1 onwards, the queue managers acquire a read-write lock to give them access to their data. Only one instance of the queue manager can have its lock at a time. Shared files systems must provide the data write integrity and guarantee the exclusive access to the files and release locks on failure to work reliably with WebSphere MQ. And for that, you must have to run AMQFSCK command to test whether the network file system will control access the queue manager data and locks correctly. Slide number 7, please. Some of the WebSphere MQ files are accessed exclusively by the active queue manager. Other files are shared, and the MQ files are split between into the program files and data files, and the program files are typically installed in the local drive, and the data and the data log directories should be shared. Next slide, please. Here, there are a couple of commands which helps us creating a queue manager. These have been discussed in earlier presentation of on queue manager that one can refer. I already suggested that. So the create queue manager on the primary or active nodes using CRT MQM command, there are two flags extra. In addition, from version 6.1, they have upgraded, they added two flags to it, the MD and LD. The MD gives the you can define the location of the data files, and using LD, you can define the log file location. And the QMGR is the queue manager name. And all additional queue managers and secondary nodes, you can define more than one node. All these additional standby nodes you can define using add mqinf command. Slide number 14, please. Once we have the queue managers created, the next step would be the creating the broker. You can do it using the primary broker can be created on the primary node using mqsa create broker command. This command has an extra flag, minus E, using which we can define the shared work path directory. The shared work path directory is the directory where you can define on the network shared network storage. Here in the example, I missed a minus Q flag here. Using mqsa create broker, you can, with the name rmibrk7, I've created on a shared work network path. That's an example. The next slide, I'll show you how one can go creating a... Can we go to the next slide? Slide number 15. How we can add the details of the broker into the secondary node using mqsa add broker instance command. Here, using space E again for defining the shared work path, and W is for local work path. And what these two work paths are, I'll discuss in later what file systems or folders are being created in local directory and shared work paths. So if W is an optional option, if W is not defined, then those directories will be created in the local server. For example, in UAX, Unix, it's going to be on rmqsi. And in the one Windows, it's going to be all users default directory. Slide number 16, please. Once we have created the multi-instance brokers, we can start using mqsa start command on both nodes A and B. Whether the brokers have started or not, we can test it using enhanced version of mqsa list command. The outputs look like in the slide 17 I've shown. In the node A mqsa list, if we start on the node A first, then we see it shows the broker is started as a multi-instance broker running as an active in an active mode. In the node B, they have started as a standby node. The next slide. Slide number 18. So what is the distribution of processes between standby and active nodes? In the active node, usually what we saw, the BIP service, BIP broker, and HTTP listeners and data flow engine processes, that's how we see all the processes in normal broker that we see in active node as well. Along with that, we see the MQ listener port also gets activated there. In the standby node, we see a BIP service process and BIP broker process in a standby mode. If the standby node fails over, then these processes will become active and picks up the services. Next slide, please. Slide number 19. So this can be viewed as here, if you try to connect to any of these two servers or two servers, then the toolkit only connect to the active server, and the passive server or standby server won't be able to connect because there is no queue manager port available on that server. Slide number 20, please. Here, I'm going to. This slide shows how the file system folders have been organized or distributed between the local file system or mqsa in case of Unix system, and versus the network shared network directory. In the local directory, the log files, and error handling files and shared Java classes are stored. Except that, all the remaining folders have been actually transferred to the shared network directory, like registry files and components and UUIDs of files of the execution groups and configuration files and log files. Everything, all the remaining folders have been placed in the network folder. Can we go to the next slide? So the backup mqsa backup broker command and mqsa restore broker commands are still valid even in while taking up backing up and restoring the multi-instance brokers. And the next slide, I'm going to show you how, slide number 22, how one can try to delete the brokers. In order to delete, the order of deletion of the multi-instance brokers and its associated instances is an important thing. If you run MQSI move broker instance command to remove all the broker instances before you try to remove the broker itself, this command removes all local references to the broker instance but doesn't affect the shared configuration for multi-instance broker on the shared work path. You cannot use MQSI remove broker instance command against a standby broker instance. As the next step, you have to run MQSI delete broker command to remove the multi-instance brokers. This removes all references to the broker on both the local and shared work paths. You cannot use, again, this command on a standby broker. If you, for example, mistakenly remove the broker, you can add using MQSI add broker instance command, and provided that you have not run MQSI delete broker command. If the multi-instance broker is removed by using MQSI delete broker command, then you have to use MQSI create broker command with minus -e option to recreate the broker again. Can we go to the slide number 23? Here I gave some standard QManager commands. I think most of these commands you can get it from the Info Center. Slide number 24, please. I'm going to next discuss about the failover testings, how they would take place in the next slide, number 25. And the node A, that is host A, is active host, and node B, that is a standby node. If you see DSPMQ, the status is the queue managers on the node A is active and node B is a standby. And you can see in the MQSI list as well, the brokers are active in the node A and on the node B, it is standby. But if you give a end MQM command with the space minus S flag, then the queue manager, the active queue manager will be stopped, and then the standby queue manager will become active. Then in the MQSI list, if you compare, the node A, the broker instance is stopped, and on the node B, the standby node, it became active. That's how it works. I mean, if you want to test the failover, in the slide number 26, if you go. There are a couple of APARs that I want to present here. The IC64650 has been raised since the MQSI list command doesn't show correct process IDs. Once after failover, a standby node failed over, became active, that change has been not initially correctly represented. So that's why this APAR has been raised. In addition, I have to point out another APAR, which I have not mentioned here, with the MQ, spare MQ service, APAR IC64521 identifies that end MQM command, if it is used to stop an active instance of the queue manager, and there, in turn, standby instance 2 stops, and the stop of this on the standby instance is not very clean, and some of the process still hanging over there. So that APAR takes care of the defect in the MQ part of the multi-instances. Slide number 27. Here I'm going to talk about slightly about IC91. What is the status of IC91 as the service version 7 multi-instance brokers? The scripts that are scripts to create and maintain resource groups in HACMP and other clusters are valid only for version 6 and 6.1, as we all know. In version 7, many of these scripts are no longer required, as there are a number of changes have occurred. But however, they have updated some of the useful scripts which still one can use and which are going to be available in the next revision of Info Center. Like HAMQSI start and stop broker commands, which helps to stop both active and passive nodes. In the next slide. 28, please. The main question from the customers, number of customers, is how we configure the multi-instance brokers with an existing HA manager. Like, if I have HA solutions already in place, how do we configure? It's much easier to configure message broker now in an existing cluster after introduction of multi-instance concept. What you have to do is mount the shared file system to primary node of the cluster. Can we go to this slide number 29? And then create a message broker using MQSI create broker command. And then Once you create on one of the nodes, then you mount the shared file system to the secondary node of the cluster and add the message broker instance using MQSI add broker instance command. The important point here is, well, using HM Manager, it's not mandatory to have shared file system to be mounted on both nodes at the same time. Slide number 30, please. Here, I'm giving you some useful information on the links of MC91, IC91, and earlier VST on MQ, on multi-instances queue managers. Let me go to the next slide, 31. Here, this chart includes links of number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere product and developer work software, in-depth technical information, and the events. You can you can visit WebSphere.org for user group information and product information, and the IBM Education Assistant concept of self-help modules to get new users up to the learning curve faster. I can go to the next slide for question answers.
Thank you, Ralph, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Harley, we would like to open the lines for questions.
Our first question comes from Murthy Nuna. Your line is open.
Hi, I got about three questions. My first question is about licensing. Is licensing required on all the nodes in the cluster? Like if you're actually, there is an active node, passive node, is licensing required on both the nodes? Question number two is about the failover process itself. Looks like this is all queue manager failure driven. So what is the thought process behind that? Why is the assumption that it's always the queue manager that fails? Number three is about IC91. I am very much familiar with IC91. My observation is that the scripts in IC91 are actually made as available as commands in version 7. Is that a fair comment? I am done.
The first question is regarding the licensing. These multi-instances is part of the product. So if you have the license for version 7 broker, you can use it for all nodes, even you don't have to buy any additional licenses. The second one is the failure process is queue manager failure driven, you said. Yes, that is absolutely right. The broker queue manager multi-instances concept is actually based on the queue manager only. So if you, that's what I mentioned in one of the earlier slides, that if you created the broker using the queue manager user ID, then the failover also takes along with the queue manager concepts and timings. And regarding your third question, IC91 command, the IC91 commands are entirely different from the commands that version 7 provides. They are more robust and it covers a lot of other additional checks and balances. So that way, IC91, all features are now included in version 7. And some of the additional commands that are useful from IC91 are going to be displayed in the Info Center in the next release.
Rao, about licensing, my question is primarily like, we actually pay license by number of CPUs. Supposing that if I have 10 CPUs in node A and another 10 CPUs in node B, am I paying for 10 CPUs or 20 CPUs?
No, 10 only.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Weinfield, your line is open.
Hi, just a follow-on to the licensing question. On Node B, it's required to install the product, of course, right? MQ as well as broker, if you can use a multi-instance broker and queue manager.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so regardless that the products are installed on the additional node, there's no additional licensing requirement in this passive active configuration. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
Okay, thank you.
We do have a question. Jason Walker, your line is open.
Yes, hi. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding on this licensing topic that's come up. In the event that you actually have more than one queue manager on either side, so if node A and node B are actually supporting multiple instances or multiple multi-instance queue managers, you would have to have licensing on both sides, wouldn't you, in order to be able to provide? I guess I'm getting confused on if you have a passive node, you don't pay for the licensing, but you have to fully install MQ in order for it to be there as an eventual failover active in the event of those failover activities. I just want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly.
You have to follow the MQ policies here. Whatever that they have for licensing, then you have to follow it. But you don't have to buy extra licenses for these multi-instances feature. That's what I'm trying to impress upon you.
Okay, so the installation of MQ is still going to be, if I have 10 CPU on server A and 10 CPU on server B, I'm going to have to pay for MQ, a total of 20 MQ licenses from a CPU perspective in order to be able to provide that multi-instance queue manager. The multi-instance queue manager itself is not an additional license. It's still going to be 20 CPU.
Right. If MQ queue manager, if you have to pay for MQ queue manager for 20 CPUs, then you have to pay for that. But what I'm saying is, for multi-instance, the feature to use, you don't have to pay any extra licenses. That's what.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And one other question, if I may, is in regards to any type of disk caching or replication if you're truly in an MTHA configuration. So server A and server B are actually in two geographically disparate locations with high-speed networks between the two, you know, being able to provide less than, let's say, 5 millisecond latency between the two sites. Any considerations around disk caching for the replicated storage in order to be able to provide, are there any kind of requirements around disk replication, disk caching, those types of things?
I thought I mentioned that in one of the slides. You should disable any disk caching. You must for the network file system that you will be using. It's a must.
Okay. If you're replicating the storage, is there any type of considerations around synchronous or asynchronous?
The replication between two SAN disks or what?
Yep.
I mean, Any here, what I'm the bottom line is, any disk caching on the network file system should be disabled. Whether you're trying to replicate, but for example, network the shared storage versus you want to replicate that data to other data, then you don't. I mean, as far as this shared directories where the shared storage is located, you must disable the caching.
Okay.
Is that clear?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Our next question comes from Mark with IBM. Your line is open.
Good presentation.
Thank you.
Curious, you said that in one of the slides that if you had an active and a standby instance, that if you stopped the active broker, that the standby broker would also stop. I mean, would start. Is that automatic? When you stop the broker, the active broker, or how does that work?
What I was saying is, if on the active broker, when the broker is actively running, when there is a problem with the queue manager on that server, or that server fails, then the services will be transferred to the standby mode, the standby server. You can test it, the failover, using nmqm command with the space minus s flag to manually create a failover situation.
If you're doing maintenance and you stop the active queue manager, I mean, I would assume you'd stop the active broker first and then stop the active queue manager. Is that going to cause a failover? And if you didn't want that to happen, how would you proceed?
You should not use MQSI stop command. If you use MQSI stop command, then both the nodes will get stopped. So the failover you can do failover using endmqm space minus s flag. So this failover, the broker failover, is always controlled by the queue manager.
Okay.
Did I clarify it? So
yeah. I mean, it's the sequence of, if you want to bring the system down for maintenance, the sequence is going to be a little different than normal. That's what I was trying to.
Yeah, definitely. It is different because MQSI stop is not going to work.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye. Thank you. Our next question comes from Prabhu. Your line is open.
Hey, Ralph. Yeah, it was on similar lines to Mark's question now. So each time a broker fails or stops, so is that it? I mean, in the sense it does not come up on the other side until the queue manager goes down?
Yeah, here you do NMQM space minus S. If you stop the queue.
No, I'm not doing anything. So assume on its own, due to some issue, the broker goes down.
Yes. Yeah. When the broker goes down, obviously the same machine, the queue manager will be down, and then
How do you mean? Obviously, the queue manager can still be running, right, with the broker down?
If the queue manager is not down, then the failover won't happen.
So, I mean, this is a typical situation. You can have the broker go down at any point of time without the queue manager going down.
Right. In that situation, because the multi-instance of the broker is associated with the queue manager.
No, I agree. So does that mean in the middle of the night you have issue happening on the broker and it goes down? So a manual intervention is required to make this failover, or some kind of a script in place to recognize.
You can actually write a cron job.
I agree. So that's some kind of external monitoring needed to ensure this is down, then initiate a script to move failover, bring the queue manager down and all that.
Yes, that's what I understand.
If the broker by instance goes down, we'll have to manually bring down the queue manager so that it can come up on the other side.
Yes.
Yeah, and one more thing. I think somebody asked this too, just to get a better clarification. So assuming on the active side, there are multiple different active queue brokers, assume, or multiple active queue managers on different boxes. But on the passive, for some reason, we have in non-prod environments to squeeze in money or space or infrastructure, we have a common failover system. We have this set up in many places out here. So the failover box is a common box, whereas the active box is independent. In that case, how does this work?
I'm not quite sure.
So you have broker 1, 2, and 3 all running, active brokers running on three individual physical boxes.
Right.
Whereas the failover box for all the three is going to be a single box.
Not necessary, no. I mean, you have to have multiple, instances of these brokers.
Multiple instances of failover brokers are created on the...
Yeah. What you're saying is, For any system, in a failover scenario system, in multi-instance brokers, you can have only one active and one passive. So if you have three active brokers created, then you have to have three standby brokers you have to create. They're independent.
Okay. But that kind of a setup can exist on the same box. Yes. It's not different from the previous scenario.
No, not necessary.
Yeah, I'm good for now. Thank you. Thanks for your clarifications.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Alex Linder, your line is open.
Okay, great. The first is about the MQ cluster and the compatibility of older versions. Is there any architecture when you can merge a queue manager from 6 versions with the 7 with these new options of the multi-instance and when you define sender channels with 2 IPs or more options, like you can do it with the 6 version. So how is the cluster will work? This is my first. Second question is about the storage, the shared storage, 8.11 in your presentation. Can I use a different solution?
Different solution? What kind of different solution you're talking about?
Okay. Except NFS, but if you, let's go one by time, like you will answer the first one.
Okay, the first question, I can answer that. The clustering, in presence of MQ clustering, how this works, that's what I think I understand your question.
First of all, talk about the MQ cluster. Okay.
The MQ cluster, the multiple instances creation and maintenance, that's going to come up shortly. Probably, I think, in the month of March or February. One of the MQ engineers is going to present on that. As far as the broker is concerned, vis-a-vis the MQ cluster, is that your, in the presence of MQ cluster, can we have a broker, multi-instance broker, can we create? Is that your question?
No, was interested in the MQ cluster, but like I have a queue manager version 6 and queue manager version 7. Can I have a cluster that has both of them? Like,
as far as multi-instance brokers is concerned, you cannot migrate, and there cannot be a mix and match. It must be in the broker must be version 7, and queue manager should be at 7.01. Period.
No, I understand this. I will try to rephrase my question. I have other, like, I have only queue managers of version 6, and I want to put my new broker version 7 in an existing cluster. So can
okay.
I or cannot I do it? Like, do I need to upgrade all of my other queue managers to version 7.01 so they collaborate in the same cluster?
Here I'm talking about multi-instance brokers. The broker coexistence with version 6.0 you're asking. On February 2nd, one of my colleagues is presenting on migration issues, the coexistence of different versions of broker. But I think your question could be addressed during that.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Hal Kaplan. Your line is open.
Two questions. For those of us using Solaris, when will Message Broker 7.0.1.1 be released? And in a queue manager cluster with two concurrent message brokers, what are best practices for multi-instance queue managers and multi-instance message brokers? Assuming everything is at 7.0.1.
Can you please repeat the second question, please?
In a queue manager cluster with two concurrent message brokers, two active message brokers, what are best practices for multi-instance queue managers and multi-instance message brokers?
The multi-instance brokers cannot set it up as an active configuration.
No, but if you have two existing message brokers running at the same time, can you make each of them multi-instance? So if one fails, the one will...
Yeah. Okay.
And what are the best practices for doing that?
That means what you want to have is you want to have on two nodes of the cluster, you want to have independent active versions of the multi-instance brokers. You want to have that.
That's correct. That is correct.
I'm not quite sure how you're going to set that up. Then you have to have for the active and standby, you have to have a shared network storage.
SRDF, each message broker is replicated to a failover site. Cross-replicated, and one is running in the failover site, one is running in the primary site, and they're both cross-replicated to the other sites. So can multi-instance message brokers be set up so if one fails, the one on the other side will take over so that two are active at any given time?
Yeah, right. You should be able to do it. So what do you mean by best practices? I think you could try, but I cannot visualize unless I talk in detail what exactly your setup is. But definitely I think one can try that. That's a very interesting setup.
Okay, and my question about the 7.0.1.1?
The Solaris, I don't know exactly when it is going to be, fixed.
Because Webster MQ 7.0.1.1 was released.
Released, I know, but I just confirmed that the Solaris is still not, they're not still supporting. That's what my latest news is, but that has to be checked from the MQ side.
The MQ is supported except for certain
ICD
file systems. But
yeah,
for most file systems, it is supported.
Yeah, if the MQ is supporting, definitely a broker will support.
Okay, but do I need 7.0.1.1 for that?
Right, yes. Whatever the MQ you have to have the requirement, then that version of MQ has to be installed.
I have that, but do I need the same version of the message broker? And if so, when will that be released?
I have to check. Then if you open up your or send an email, then I'll check with my developers and see what the status it is.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Troy Wells. Your line is open.
Thank you, Raul. I guess one comment and then one question. The gentleman just now speaking about the multi-setup with the brokers on multiple LPARs and being able to do active with each of those. We have kind of similar situation. And I guess my guess is that it would probably work. The only caution would be, of course, if you end up with an active queue manager, one LPAR that fails to the other LPAR that also has an active, maybe a second stack active broker on that, you could run into issues with performance from a CPU standpoint, from a memory standpoint, if you have both brokers running on that one LPAR. So that's something we need to look at as well on our side. The question for Rao is, do you have any documentation that's related around patterns or scenarios that kind of everybody has been asking questions on today? And I think, you know, something like that may help everyone from, you know, a testing standpoint, that when they begin testing this, to understand everything from the different scenarios.
I think most of the questions are, I think, around the licensing. That I think I'll update that on the support page of the message broker. And the second question is regarding the failovers in MQ clustering. That I think will be addressed when one of the engineers from the MQ team talk about it. If I have additional information, or when I discuss or any of the specific scenarios, then we'll keep posting that on our support page. You should have access to them.
Yeah, I guess the kind of questions around, you know, the scenarios, situations where, like, you know, you do need to take one broker down, you know, understanding those scenarios that, you know, the failovers or whatever don't occur. That's just a general statement on that. So. Thank you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Pat Mogilinicki. Your line is open.
On the failover scenario slide, when the queue manager moves to node B, it shows that broker now becomes the active broker, but on node A, it's not showing that it is a standby broker. Is there anything that you have to do?
The node A broker, it's stopped.
So you have to restart it?
Yeah, you have to restart it.
Okay, and then what is the impact of network outages on multi-instance queue managers and brokers?
Network outage, if you network outage in the sense what, like connectivity between the shared storage and shared network storage, you mean?
Right.
It's mounted file systems. So if there is a network failure, then obviously the broker won't work. The queue managers won't work.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm showing no further questions.
Thank you, Harley. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.